most of the times when I walk into a meeting, I want someone to challenge my pattern, to challenge my thinking, because that's what the world needs. So if you want to be a marketer, just be bold enough to have an imagination, work on your skills, solve problems, and articulate them interestingly to people who matter. The Great Indian Marketing Show.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Great Indian Marketing Show. I'm your host Adil Bandukwala, and today we have a marketing powerhouse on our show, the amazing Tuhina Pandey, CMO and Director of Marketing and Communications at IBM India and South Asia. I've had the pleasure of knowing Tuhina for a bit now, and let me tell you, she's the kind of person who makes you wonder if humility is an Olympic sport, because she'd be bringing home the gold every single time. Her background reads like the plot of a bestseller, yet she's so down to earth that you'd never guess the powerhouse she is from a casual conversation. We click like two peas in a pod, and I'm constantly in awe of her. Honestly, if there was an award for being both inspiring and incredibly easy to get along with, Tuhina would be a living legend with her own Hall of Fame. To give her the introduction she truly deserves, though, I'll hand it over to my trusty AI sidekick, Keep AI, who, much like Tuhina, understands the pulse of a great narrative. Let's bring on Keep AI.
Thank you, Adil, for that stellar introduction. Even as an AI, I can recognize the magic of a compelling story. And Tuhina Pandey is nothing short of a storytelling queen in the tech world. Her journey is nothing short of inspiring, with global experience, a unique blend of business acumen and creative flair. She bridges the gap between commerce and creativity seamlessly. From leading marketing and communications to shaping digital strategies and creating impactful content, Tuhina has done it all. And here's a fun fact. Tuhina began her career as an associate editor for technology at NDTV. From the newsroom to the boardroom, she's now one of the most sought-after marketing minds in the industry. I can't wait to soak in the wisdom she's about to share.
All right, thank you, KPI. Tuhina, welcome to the Great Indian Marketing Show.
With that introduction, Adil, you are my official brand ambassador. Thank you for having me, Adil. And it's been just so much fun knowing you. And I think the brain sport that we play and the kind of bouncing board that we are for one another, I quite cherish it. So this conversation is going to be fun. And I loved the bit that KPI brought on board as well. So looking forward.
Awesome. With that, Tuhina, we'll just get started. I want to start with talking about crafting compelling narratives in B2B marketing. You know, you often highlighted the importance of storytelling in effective marketing. However, B2B marketing seems to be heavily reliant on often traditional methods with slightly lesser emphasis on storytelling when compared to B2C. Do you believe that B2B companies should invest more in creating compelling narratives? You seem to have clearly done that, and for a long time now. If so, what strategies can people employ, marketers employ, to enhance their storytelling approach?
Right, Adil, and storytelling sometimes is a buzzword, right? I mean, we keep talking about it. What does it really mean? And I firmly believe, as you said, it's something that we've lived for centuries together, right? That's how the knowledge systems have traveled from one generation to the other, in time capsules, in the most effective way that they have turned into folklore. It'll be slightly underutilized if we B2B marketers were not to leverage the full potential of storytelling. And you could argue that, you know, B2B really, I mean, just hang in there, cool off, and it's a rational buying decision. You got to talk data, you got to talk numbers. Where is the scope for storytelling? You rather sort of, you know, be fact-based. Which is true, but then there is art of data storytelling as well. There is a challenge, there is a plot, right? There are lots of problems that the hero or the heroine has to overcome. There are ways your product can be the hero and you finally sort of solve it. Or sometimes you don't, but you keep a door ajar, which gets your audience really excited about something. I mean, if you were to jog back history, Adil, imagine things that you remember. Imagine a speech that moved a country into a freedom movement. Imagine people who told a story of themselves and inspired millions. the power of storytelling is it can really impact human behavior, even change the course of history. And while it may sound lofty, but if we just sort of reflect inward, we all respond to that. That's how our human brain, mind works. I mean, let's not talk about Netflix binge watching. We all know what the reality is. A little bit of inspiration from that, a little bit of honing that craft and dispensing knowledge systems, dispensing information in an interesting way, in an interesting delivery system, is simply what storytelling is. It's about how you and I connect. It's about when you talk about an experience, how I remember that more than somebody's designation, right? So I love quotes, and you know that. One of my favorites that I wrote a few years back is, your designation doesn't inspire people, your story does. And that is truly our legacy. I mean, that's this legacy that a brand that you and I leave, which outlives us. So I think investment in storytelling is it. And I am a big believer in it, Adil.
Awesome, awesome. I think that's quite powerful. Your designation doesn't matter, but your story does. I mean, if you cut deep into it, designations are temporary, right? These are just like milestones in life where you're passing on the baton to somebody else in a certain time interval, and then you move on. So designations are permanent, but you are who you are, and your story is permanent, and your story can't be potentially changed. So that's a very powerful quote. Thanks for sharing that, Tuva.
And what you said, right? I mean, I think the part which is very interesting to me is when a story turns into a folklore, Adil. For example, when nobody remembers you told, it was your story, but it becomes a relatable piece of interconnecting points between others and amongst others. And when it becomes a folklore, it's outlived every ROI, every KPI. And I'm quite inspired by KPI. So KPI back again. I think that's the power of it. It can outlive any campaign. It can outlive you and I and all of it. So yes, agree.
Yeah, this just reminds me of the earlier podcast I was hosting earlier this week with Bala. And he was talking about the advertising campaigns that he did in the 90s. And there are so many of them that we remember, right? The classic Pepsi versus Coke wars. There was Shah Rukh Khan dancing on top of a bus, right? A Fevicol ka Mazboot Jod, and so many more that you can't potentially forget. But those are great stories that have stuck to us and for years now and etched in our memory. So 100% agree with you there.
There you go.
From stories, let's talk a little bit about the intertwining of B2B and B2C.
Mm-hmm.
There's a growing conversation around the convergence of B2B and B2C now. And often there are plays that companies are working on which are B2B to C. Do you observe significant differences on how these two domains operate? Or do you think these distinctions are becoming far less pronounced?
I would love to hear what your thought is, but from my vantage point, Adil, I think it is in our minds. The distinction, because that's how the industry defines, that's how our craft is defined, that's how we sort of try to differentiate in our briefings at times. So I feel like it's more here than out there in the reality. So if you were to shift the locus standi a little bit closer to the customer, from the function and how we operate as an industry, then it doesn't really matter, right? Then the filter is, what does my customer need? And sometimes that customer need could be about their customer. So I could use any toolkit across the spectrum that responds to the need of the customer in that time and space. Another time, it technically in a B2B space, and a lot of times it's a rational, long-term, complex buying, which requires a very different skill set, which requires a very B2B palette to deploy. And I will do that. So for me, I am not going to kind of, you know, limit my warfare or limit my tool set. I'm going to pick it up, you know, any brush that suits the moment in time and addresses the need of my customer, and as long as it paints the picture that my customer or a client needs to see. That's how I look at it. Now, some would say, you know, and there are strong point of views, and that's why I said I'm quite curious to see what you think. of course, there are, you know, purists who say, listen, let's not waste our time. It is B2B. And then there are people who say, listen, at the end of it, it's your customer's customer. And you've got to speak that language. I believe it's a bit of both, depending on who the buyer is, what is the need, what do they really want, where are they in their cycle, who are their stakeholders, what is the problem that they're wanting to solve. So my language, my tone, my tenor, my brand promise responds to the need of the client. And that's my filter, not the other way around, is how I see it.
I love it. I think you clearly like flipped the question and asked, what is the business problem? And then I'm going to solve it that way. And then you brought in the entire content spectrum of tone, voice, channel, persona. And based on that, you know, you go ahead and craft a solution. I think absolutely the right way to approach things.
Where are you at with that? And what are you hearing?
I think like, I totally agree with your approach. I think the focus in my head has to be on the user. There have been so many companies that have seen product-led growth. And today they are literally in billions of dollars in revenue, particularly in B2B SaaS. But they all, instead of, you know, going and doing the classic enterprise sales motion, actually followed the product-led growth or the PLG way. And the one thing that they focused on is just being true to their users, authentic and original, and no nonsense. Just, you know, getting it there. And marketing doesn't have to be fluff. Just be real. I think that is what people appreciate today. They want to be real. Like when you go to your social media, you don't want people to give you buy my product. I mean, we're dealing with that at work every single day, Tuhina, you and me, right? We're buying tools. We're getting into those discussion meetings. So when I go to any brand social media, the last thing I want to do is, yeah, this is why I'm so good. Buy me. Rather, I want to be entertained. I want to be told, I want that smirk to come on my face saying that, yeah, you guys are funny. You guys get me as a person. You get my needs as a person. So just be real with me. I think those kind of brands are kind of winning today, where they're like, okay, business will happen. Let's keep that aside. There's a separate communication layer for that, like you said, channels. But I think for maybe plays like social media, then you have a very different approach where you're saying, yeah, I don't want to really talk to you about selling me, but I want to engage with you. I want to have a dialogue with you. I just want to bring a smile to your face.
Get me. That is such an important piece, right? Because to your point, I think buyers today are extremely knowledgeable. And even your first interaction point is you already talking to someone who's well-educated, who's gone online, who's dug through enough material. So they are having a very intelligent, sophisticated conversation with you. And if you don't meet them midway, if you don't really engage, if you don't really understand their needs and are willing to engage a little bit more deeper, it just doesn't stick. So real, authentic is right. I mean, the manicured production and overproduction is a bit of a nuisance these days, isn't it? And everyone wants the real deal.
100%. We'll switch gears and we'll talk a little bit about career decisions now, Tuhina.
Interesting. Okay, you know, let's go.
I'm curious to get your pick on this because you've been with IBM for a while now. But I want to talk about the role of company culture in career decisions. Mm. Like company culture significantly impacts employee experience. Everybody knows that. And IBM is known for its strong cultural values. From your perspective as a marketing leader, should individuals prioritize an enriching workplace culture over a higher salary? Now, this is for all the young marketers who tune into our show and they're like, okay, I have these two offers. Where should I go? One's giving me a higher salary, but the other's got great people, great culture. So what do I choose? How do I make this decision? It's hard for somebody just kind of jumping into the bandwagon in this industry. So question is, what are key considerations in making such a decision? Your advice would be super helpful.
Absolutely, Adil. And I love to give it in one line, but I'm going to go the slightly roundabout so that people get the context of what I'm trying to say. Look, another quote at you, values drive valuation, and I thoroughly believe in it. And it's the culture is really, Adil, what you experience subconsciously over a period of time. It is not a moment, but it is over a period of time. You feel it. Those are not pronounced or written on websites, but it really comes to life every time you experience the brand in different contexts on a mundane day where nothing is happening, where every small thing exhibits that value. When I joined IBM, and there were all kinds of, because there is an IBMer out there who's advising a new IBMer all the time. You know that. I mean, you know. So you came with mixed emotions. You don't know what to expect and what does really that culture from inside means. One of the things that I experienced was that while this is a big, more than a century old company, the disruption is constant and it comes from the core. Some of the long-term IBMers are disrupting at a pace that you won't believe. And, you know, so that's there. The amount of, every time I pushed the boundary and experimented on a canvas, there was a huge, the system soaked in that experiment. There was sort of, you know, there was a sense of empowerment. And these are the things, Adil, you actually experience when you fail. When things don't go right, that's when you know what the culture is. That's when you really experience it firsthand with no gloss, no rose-tinted spectacles. And I think the part about IBM that I enjoy most is that every day you can see that it walks the talk. And it's not a fancy quote written somewhere and forgotten. People practice it. IBMers uphold it every day. And that's how the culture evolves and, you know, moves forward. Nothing is rainbows and roses every day. One of the things that I always believe is that you cannot outsource your responsibility in being a culture agent. And one of the advice that I have for all new IBMers, and I was just talking to some of them yesterday, that when you join IBM, IBM must become a little bit like you, just as you should become a little bit like IBM. Right? And that's where the culture expands and grows. Anything which is stagnant withers away, right? So the culture also has to evolve and people have to have the appetite to do it. Now, coming to the answer part, I feel like my advice is don't miss the woods for the trees. Because you really want to have fun. You want to enjoy. You want to grow. You should be able to change your careers without changing your company. And the one way to do it is you play the long game. If you reflect back, Adil, and we've lived enough to know that eventually it's even Steven, right? One year you feel like you're a rocket. Another year you feel like you're under the sea. But eventually that consistency and how you chart out all stacks up. And I believe that when you play the long game, it works out much better in the long term. So if I'm starting out or if I'm early on in my career and somebody gave me this advice, don't look at the designation, don't look at the payslip, look at the role, look at the impact you can create. Everything else will retrofit into your career. So any day, culture over salary any day, but be selfish. It's about growth. And I'm not saying salary is not important, money is not important, but just play the long game. Don't be short-sighted and don't miss the woods for the trees.
So I think you started off so amazingly. And there's so much of wisdom there, Tuhina. So one, you said there are values and then there is valuation. And you said values drive valuation. That is so powerful. So you're not saying that you're going to miss out at any point in life. Whatever choice you make, I think those are both experiences that you will potentially learn from. And experiences, however long may be, are always short. You would always go back thinking, saying that only if I was there some more, maybe I could have learned something else. But then there's always something better for you in life. There's this other thing also that I think when you were saying, right, it transported me to one of those Zakir Khan quotes.
Ah.
He said, Kaam 19 chalega, aadmi 20 chahiye.
Kya baat hai?
That is so powerful, right? I mean, think about it. You want the right collection of people next to you. And you do not want to compromise on people come what may. So, right, if it means working for Tuhina, absolutely. But if it's working for someone random, although they pay more, I'm not going to learn anything. And I don't think they back me enough. I don't think they value me enough. I don't think they're invested so much in my growth. So I don't think I'm going to go there. So that's why I think what you said was so relatable and I could kind of correlate Zakir Khan there. But sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No, absolutely. That's a fantastic aadmi beast chahiye. That is the bottom line, really. And I think the realization that we are not going to live on Earth, I mean, no matter how, you know, the life expectancy increases, technology comes in, and I hope we get there. Well, we have X amount of time on this planet. Let's make it count and do it our way. So, yes.
For sure. Let's double click into this a little more, Tuhina. I'm kind of enjoying this. So the other question that a lot of youngsters ask me is, hey, a lot of them are very confused in their careers when it comes to making education choices, right? Mm-hmm. And now what has happened is people have gotten really good. Kids have gotten really smart today. So when I meet young people that I'm interviewing, they often go to LinkedIn and they buy a LinkedIn Pro account, premium account. And then they do mapping. And one of the guys that I met recently said, here's what he did. So he's like, I want to grow in my career, but I wanted to study what's happened in the last two decades. So I went to LinkedIn. I looked at people who are currently CMOs, CROs, CTOs, CPOs, right? Heads of all function. And I wanted to do pattern recognition and figure out where are these guys coming from. The original school of thought in India or worldwide is you need to have solid pedigree. As in, you need to be from an IIT, you need to be from an IIM to scale heights. But what he told me is that, hey, the world is changing. If I look at some of the top CMOs, CTOs, CEOs, more than 45% of them are not from IIT, IIM colleges. And this is from his personal research. I've not validated it. But come to think of it, it made a lot of sense because a lot of my friends, sure, are from IIT, IIM, but a significant amount are not from those schools either. Question is, for aspiring marketers, the reputation of college is super successful in making a marketing career, at least to act as a launch pad. But is that really required today? Is the world changing? Because I think if you have the skills, pedigree really doesn't matter today and can catapult you faster than potentially an MBA that might cost you longer in the long run because you'll have that huge loan to kind of clear out. So just being very real, would love to get those raw answers for the young community.
Absolutely. So from my perspective, Adil, we are in a zero experience age. Anyone who walked in and said, I have 15 years experience in social media, you and I know, does not hold the light of the day. It just doesn't work because the world, the technology, pace, human needs, human behavior, climate, everything is changing so fast. If I just reflect back on my career, I studied accountancy and economics and audit and tax. I became a business journalist. I've done media training. I've done a startup. I've done my own consulting. I've done communications, corporate affairs, marketing, sales. Your education doesn't necessarily inform or pave your career. So to see it as if that is going to shape your career, no. What you do in education, you form your foundation. You learn to ask the right questions. You learn to have your cognitive abilities developed. You learn to sort of, you know, have your learning muscle developed. You learn to learn from each other. That is a foundation, the bedrocks that you're putting in as to who you are. But ultimately, you have to become the sponge who's willing to soak and who's willing to sort of, you know, apply those learning onto the next canvas, right? So if you want to be an ace marketer, what you really need to be is fearless with your imagination. What you really need to do is dig deep and tap into your own uniqueness. Don't try and become someone else. I think what differentiates people, youngsters especially, are their uniqueness, their fresh thinking, their out-of-the-box thinking, their energy, their zeal, their entrepreneurial thinking. That's what we are looking for. I mean, most of the times when I walk in a meeting, I want someone to challenge my pattern, to challenge my thinking, because that's what the world needs. So if you want to be a marketer, just be bold enough to have an imagination, work on your skills, solve problems, and articulate them interestingly to people who matter. You will be hired and you'll have a fantastic, glowing career. So not saying discount your education, not saying reputed institutions don't matter, because some of the science and some of the courses and the templates and the working feel that they have is fantastic, but it's entirely down to the individual of how they utilize that canvas and how they apply it. So in my books, it's a zero experience era, and every idea which can execute beautifully and solve a problem today is in the market and is equal to anyone who has a sumptuous, huge experience. Lastly, life experience counts too, right? And it sometimes it's a function of age, I'm not denying it, because over a period of time, you experience life and you become very different than, you know, your ability, your resistance, your connecting the dots. But at the same time, there are old souls when they are young, and then there are people who never grow up. So I'm going to put that aside too.
That is so refreshing. That's very well put, Suhina. I think what you said is, when you meet me, challenge my perspective and share something that makes me think about. It doesn't necessarily have to be right, but give me a breath of fresh air. Because, you know, all of us over a period of time get confined in our own ways of doing things. And it's very important that somebody shakes us up and says that, have we considered this possibility? And then it's very cool to double click and see where it potentially leads.
And
because we're Alice in Wonderland, right? There are so many places you can potentially go to.
You bet. And I love that about you. I think in our interactions, Adil, I think the last time we were on a round table, I said inspiration to implementation. So you always inspire. You'll always break the boundaries. You'll always have a fresh canvas thinking. That's what expands the human potential. And then, of course, there's an element of implementation. But you can learn to implement. You can develop that muscle. But you need to think big to begin with. And that's what you want. And that goes back to saying, when I keep saying people, don't become the company. Let the company become a little bit like you. And that's how the journey goes. So absolutely. My interactions with you is always, I love that about you too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Suhina. You know, another thing that I just heard, a couple of things that, again, are super relatable. You said think big and, you know, don't let the company wireframe you in a box or something to those lines, right? And then use your personality and make it shine. When I used to work at LinkedIn, Jeff Wiener was our CEO, and he gave hiring advice often to us who were hiring. And he said he had only three rules for hiring. His three rules were, the person that you're hiring should be able to think big, get shit done, know how to have fun. If they check these three boxes, go ahead and hire them. And that rule I've implemented even to this day and made some incredible hires. And I think what you alluded to is very similar, but in your own words. So this is fantastic that I think our thoughts are kind of converging together.
Hey, Adil, can I please ask her something about Watson X? It's my cousin that works at IBM.
Good.
IBM is a pioneer in AI innovation, with products like my cousin, Watson X, leading the charge. How do you and your marketing team leverage AI in your strategies? From a B2B marketing standpoint, what practical applications of AI can companies adopt today to enhance their marketing efforts?
Well, that's a damn good question. And I'm so glad KPI, we share relatives with Adil. So that's fantastic. Watson X is certainly my favorite as well. And quickly about Watson X KPI, it might interest you. There are three elements to Watson X. There is .AI, there is .data, and .governance. So obviously you need a platform that, you know, plug and play and solves your AI needs quickly. No AI is ever successful without the data layer, right? Unless you feed the right data into AI, it doesn't really succeed. So there is that. And governance, I think that is the biggest piece of differentiation and the need of the hour, because you do want to end up in the wrong places. You want to do it in a way that sustains and stays longer, and it sort of, you know, doesn't get you into the court of law. So that's Watson X, and it's quite powerful and quite a favorite of mine. From a marketing perspective, we heavily use the full stack of AI. So there is a lot of talk on generative AI, and we are sort of, you know, looking at creating content, generating content. So there is a generative AI element at IBM marketing right now, which is front and center. But there's also a lot of automation, because you can't really reap the benefits of what you you know, get from a generative AI or AI unless you build that flywheel. So there is automation because you need to be able to leverage that in real time over and over time in a 24/7 switched on world. So there's this whole automation piece to it in a big way. And of course, there is this traditional AI where you are testing a model, where you're deploying a model, when you have descriptive, predictive analysis done on various things as well. So there is that stack. So there's this full suite of AI that we deploy in IBM and within marketing, customer segmentation, personalization, targeting our audiences, getting them the right thing at the right time. All of that is taken care of. And then generative AI is there as well in a very, very big way. So there is a lot of action in IBM. So far as marketing world is concerned, in implementing AI and harnessing the full potential of it. Hope that answers you, KPI.
That's fascinating, Tuhina. It's clear that IBM is at the forefront of AI innovation, both in terms of products like What's Next and in the application of these technologies to marketing. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure learning from you.
Thank you. Adil, I am in love with her cool glasses.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You've been enjoying conversing with KPI. But then there's a guy on my team, Sanskar. He's really responsible for kind of building and shaping her. There you go.
More Sanskar, power to him.
Thank you for building KPI and getting her to interact with us. Now, in our world, OpenAI's recent release of GPT-4o, it's been remarkable. Though they initially had to discontinue a voice feature due to its resemblance to Scarlett Johansson's voice. As a leader at IBM, what are your views on one, responsible development of advanced technologies like GenAI? How do you balance the drive for innovation with ethical considerations of AI? I'd love to know your personal views there and get into that a little more.
My favorite question comes a lot later in the conversation, Adil. But hey, responsible AI is the mantra at IBM and for me particularly as well. And I personally resonate with it in a very big way, Adil. When you look at the business needs, and I have to again focus on what is going to create value for my client, what is going to solve a business problem for my client, and what will ensure that my client doesn't end up in the court of law, doesn't have to bear the brunt of doing fast innovation at the cost of ethical means, doesn't get to scale or sustain in the long run, there are risks associated with it. It's like you're running very hard and you think you're winning a marathon, but then you find out you're running in the opposite direction. That's not what you want to do, right? You want to be winning the marathon, but you want to be running in the positive direction. So that, there is that. And today's world, and without taking anybody's name, you see, there have been a lot of these legal complications and there have been, you know, issues around AI, biases that it can have inherent. What are the variables? Is there explainability to the models that are being deployed? Sometimes it's blind dating AI. We don't want to do that. And ultimately, it puts you, and if you're accountable for that outcome, it puts your company and your client at risk. And under circumstances, we have to hold guard to that. What I always say is, and again, back to your inspiration and implementation, that while you get inspired with the potential of it, and you also have the toolkit to do it, you know how to do it, you got to invest. It's an investment. Put in the hard yards. Spend time in building foundation models. Ensure that your models represent your data. Today, less than 1% of enterprise data is represented in models. And once you've done that, you can actually hold yourself accountable to the outcomes it delivers and give peaceful nights to your clients who can then sort of, you know, evolve, grow, sustain, and make money out of AI in the long run in a way which is safe and sustainable, right? And it's like that. You know, you don't want to take two steps forward and four steps back. And for me, that's what it is. At an operating layer, really, it is about explainability. Is it explainable? Is it transparent? Is it robust? Is it fair? Does it take care of privacy? All of that put together is what really infuses the dimensions of responsible AI. And for me, there's no other way of doing it.
That was quite something, Tuina. Absolute masterclass, not only in responsible AI, but then also you weaved in a lot of marketing, storytelling. And what I absolutely love about you, Tuhina, is that you're very protective about your team, your company, and your customers. Like, you truly, madly, deeply care about people in your ecosystem and having their backs. And that is why you want to be watchful and are a fierce ambassador for responsible AI. But learned so much from you today. Really, really inspiring, Tuhina. It's evident that you're not just a marketing executive or a comms executive. You're a true visionary who understands the incredible synergy between business, creativity, and all types of all new cool tech like Gen AI. Your ability to craft compelling narratives and drive impactful strategies is really, really unparalleled. Thank you, Tuhina, for sharing your journey and expertise.
Thank you so much, Adil, and more power to you. I love the podcast that you're hosting, and you're creating so much interesting content. And let the conversations continue. So loved it. Absolutely loved talking to you.
Awesome. You heard Tuhina, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to look at her story, if you'd like to see her thoughts, if you'd like to see what she's been up to, go take a look at her profile on LinkedIn. She does share timely updates on a very regular basis. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day, everyone.
The Great Indian Marketing Show, crafted with care by Sanskar Agarwal.